David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box. So David, I hosted Jimmy Kimmel.
James Kimmel. And you
James
did a
Edward
great
Kimmel,
job.
Who was also a state senator from Louisiana.
You did two nights. Great
two nights.
Stuff.
Thank you.
You had Quentin Tarantino, among
that
others.
That was a thrill. I so loved being able to specifically compliment someone who I really admire his work tremendously. And to see him laugh when I was quoting lines from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I've seen 11 times over a period of time. Don't think I'm weird. He just laughed so hard.
He's great. You know, he did, we should have him on because he did SNL.
Wait, we should have him on. Say again.
We should have him on.
That's a good plan.
Oh, yeah. Brad Pitt. We should have him on, Quentin, because he did, he wasn't there, but we did John Travolta and we did Quentin Tarantino's Welcome Back, Kotter. That was a great sketch.
I would love to have been there when he was there, but yeah. he was such a kick and so much fun, and I love making him laugh.
And the next night you had Spade, and we had a blast. And
you came out dismantled with your what was the guy the driver was eating, the limo driver?
Cheetos
chunk was hysterical, and then something about mosquitoes.
I'll try to find that chunk and I'll put it up on Instagram or something. Mosquitoes. We did talk about the Burger King guy getting gifts at his 27 years of Burger King.
Yeah.
And then I was going to tell you that when I left SNL after 6 years, Lauren gave me a gift bag. He gave me
really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't get one.
Yeah, he gave me
David, please.
Peanut M&Ms.
Okay.
A ticket to Cats. Actually, it was just a cat. It was just cat. It was one ticket, and it was a different play. It was not great.
It wasn't even Cats?
No, it was
that
cat.
Was like a little practical. Oh, okay.
It was one ticket. Because they gave the Burger King guy one ticket to a movie.
He's got one ticket to write.
So, yeah, Lauren gave me that and a slinky. Anyway, it was great. I did appreciative.
I did Trump and Biden, which Trump was Biden. Maybe a brave, stupid, or fun, whatever you want to yeah. think in our great. Current cultural climate. But my aim was to entertain. And inside baseball, I didn't have my glasses, and I squint as Biden, and the prompter was way back. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I'm fucked. We're taping. I could barely see it.
It was live.
Yeah, then I'd open my eyes and like that. And but you know what? I did a goofy wig. I did the best I could. I want to tell you the Cheeto bit was some wonderful, but anyway,
fantastic.
Trump is fantastic. You're fantastic. And Biden, you know, the thing is, I did the whisper. We're gonna
the whisper
do
was
fly
a crusher.
On the wall because we know how to do fly on the wall. So that was fun. And the staff was incredible and the writers and producers. Great people there at Mr. Kimmel's show.
And now here's our regular intro to Ellen that's still not Ellen yet. Ellen Cleghorn, Dana.
Ellen Cleghorn
was on with me and with you.
Yes, and she was a powerhouse from the beginning. She had just a great presence. She had her bandmates at the time, Melanie Hutzel and Beth Cahill and others.
And oh, they all sort of came in together.
Siobhan
Fallon.
Yes.
Great.
And Ellen was part of that team, and she has a lot of firsts in her career. As a person, she's charming, funny.
She is smart. She's a teacher right now.
Ellen Cleghorn has a PhD in theater arts from Tisch University. So I don't think...
My friend has a PhD, pussy hound disease.
Hey, we compare that with Jack Off in the Box.
Hey, we got to keep the younger viewers here. They're starting
Welcome
to snooze.
To Flies After Dark.
Yeah.
Glowing.
No, Ellen is smart and was good in sketches. She did Zareda. She had a daughter on the show who was 5, and now she's a... we can't say. It'll be on. So we'll find out soon.
Her daughter would come around, super cute. We put her in a lot of sketches. Mm-hmm. And Ellen is just a powerhouse. Just a big, big, big personality.
Here she is, guys.
Here she is, the adorable
Ellen
Cleghorn.
Oh my gosh, Dana, look who forgot.
Look at that mask. I'm naked. I'm not a super spreader. Ellen is. Where are you?
She's know those
at
eyes. That's Ellen.
She's shopping.
She goes, "Do I need a volume or a audio on this podcast?" As long as we can see you, we can see you, Ellen.
I'm
we can't hear
sign
you.
Sign language.
Let's just air this. It's I too can't. Funny. The video too.
We can't hear you, Ellen.
You're frozen, and we can't hear you. It's funny. We hear choppy stuff.
My two sons are into hip hop and rap heavily compared to me being from the 60s. So they've introduced me to it. And we play around with beats and do rhymes and, you know, catchphrases.
Dana, do you want to hear? I'm going to sing a rap song. Okay. Ready? My name's Lamont and I was born in January. I'm a Capricorn. God, Ellen will know this one if she unfreezes.
I got one. I wrote one called "Got a Problem with This?" And it's just a big beat. You got a problem with this? And it just repeats. You got a problem with this?
That would work in a dance club if I'm on Molly.
Because really, when I hear it in the gym and it's big beats and repetitive phrasing, it feels like comedy in a way, you know?
That might be from Rapper's Delight.
I've talked about that before. Vermont. Snoop Dogg was the first one that got me hooked on it.
Ow. My name's Vermont, and I was born on a jam farm in Vermont.
Yeah, give me a word, I'll rhyme it.
Dude, I saw Snoop on the dumbest ad, Schnizzle. It's just like some corny, dopey ad on the side of a bus. I'm like, Snoop, please turn something down. Ellen, that was the funnest beginning we've had, actually.
Yeah, we're not a professional outfit, so don't worry.
Well, when you guys get really high tech and stuff, then you'll have to have me back.
Yeah, well, we are high tech.
Hey, yes. Well, it was $13.95 to get the good setup, and Cadence decided to spend $9.95 and you pay for what you get, you know. So do you have any questions?
My cable.
Or should we start?
Okay, Ellen. We have time for one final question for Ellen.
This has been Ellen.
No, Ellen, let's start by saying I was an angel at the beginning when you were there, and then we'll go from there.
You were an angel.
You know, that's nice to hear, because that place is so tough. It's hard to not be nice to everyone, but you're usually just walking down the hallway thinking. You're like thinking of a sketch, thinking of why I'm not on, thinking of why my sketch bombed, thinking of if Farley's going to eat my lunch. You know, there's a million things going through your head. So
the answer to that is yes.
The answer is always yes. And it's just hard to, you know, when you tell your side of it, I mean, you're there and you're there on one of the times we had a lot of cast members and a lot of people on a mouth to feed.
Mm-hmm. But you were very savvy anyway. So I don't think you would have ever done anything out untowards or whatever. You're always such a forward thinking man when I look back. And you introduced me to the phrase, a friend of the show.
We still say that. Lauren would go, Geraldo is a friend of the show.
A friend of the show. And then the terrorizing for the cast member, still with the show. still with the show.
I had never heard that before.
You never got still with the show. Yeah, Lauren, that was one of Lauren's favorites. I found it funny, but he's a friend of the show.
You know, Alan, one time when I think, I don't know what years you were there. I was there.
90 to 94, something like that.
Okay, so overlapped a lot, but in the summers, we would call to see if we're getting picked up. And he go, I don't know if David's ever around. And I'm like, this is the one thing my manager hears once a year review. And that's the one thing. And it's like, you got to go, Lauren, you got to be careful what you say, because that's it for a year. He's like, are you ever going to be there? I go, that's all I am, is here all the time. It's just like a thing to get me off my ass. I don't know. But it really like would stress me out to hear that.
You had so much more contact with him than I did. Because everybody makes these, I didn't know what his voice sounded like.
Do you know this is a good impression or not?
I couldn't tell you. I said, I don't know who he's doing. I guess it's Lauren.
Right. What happened with Lauren? When you got hired, that's when you talked to Lauren, and then that was kind of it for the run?
I didn't speak to him when I got hired.
Oh, you didn't speak?
The only person I spoke to was Al Franken.
Oh, really?
Al Franken.
Yeah, I would go to Al Franken's office. And then I went into the Turner's office.
Oh, Bonnie and Terry Turner.
Bonnie and Terry Turner.
That was it.
Were they the head writers by any chance, Dana?
No, they were just really pivotal. They were in a lot of quadrants. They do all kinds of styles, and they helped me a lot. Church chat.
Yeah, they were great.
And other things.
So, Ellen, they kind of like gave you the ropes or whatever?
No, they gave me no ropes. They just looked at me. They said, come in here. So I saw your tape. And then they just stare at you, and I'm like, okay. And I guess they were sizing me up to see what could I do. And Al Franken, all he did was ask me one time, he asked me if I could belch. And I was like, no. And he was through with me. And I was like, wait,
he was
what?
Through with me, literally? Hey, can you belch? Yeah. And that was it?
And then he scratched out 9 sketches.
Because I didn't, because you know, I grew up in the time when you ladies don't belch.
Well, I hope there's still a time like that.
She said, don't you dare belch. So I always was afraid. I admired people who could actually belch on cue.
Oh, and I can.
I had such a low bar. I really admire people like that.
I can, and maybe that's why I got the show.
I couldn't do it. I could. Could you guys do a spit take? I mean, spit take was kind of like with a belch. It's like an easy laugh. There's an art to the spit take, but I don't think I ever did one on this show. You know?
I like a spit take when I see people do that.
If it takes you by surprise, you know?
You know, a good spit take, you don't see a lot anymore because I think they ran through them. But if you see them now, it's kind of funny because it can't be a planned one. I mean, it can't be look planned. Oh, that's the worst. Mm-hmm. So, Ellen, you were doing stand-up right at the beginning, Ellen?
Yeah. I got it from doing stand-up because I used to be in the clubs all the time. And I think a lot of people that I used to do stand-up with got hired.
Which ones? Can you remember their names? Maybe we ran into them.
Well, look, maybe you know him. His name's Chris Rock.
Wait a minute. Chris, let me write that down.
What is up?
Chris, where has he been? I mean, what happened to Chris Rock?
Barack Obama. Our president, Barack Obama. I go, Rock, you say everything twice in your act.
I told him when I was teaching my kids how to do stand-up for the clarity of the setup. You know, I said, let's look at Chris Rock because he was really good.
He's
at
very articulate.
Hits
he nails
a premise,
the subject.
Does comedy, hits it again, and it's just like really easy on your brain so you can enjoy it. He obviously became a master of the craft.
Masterful.
Yep. So, Ellen, doing clubs back then, were you doing like Catch Rising Star or those kind? Those are the ones I kind of knew, but I didn't know like the underground ones. I just knew like a few. I never really went on when I was there.
But I saw you actually at Catch a Rising Star.
Oh, good.
So
okay,
you did go on there, David.
Well, that's the only one I knew, and I think that's when I auditioned at. And then, so that's the only one I could call and say, "Can I come down if it was now and then to do a set?" Because I didn't really know the drill.
I saw you there, and you used to do this bit about scoliosis.
Oh, I think I like girls, a little arch back, a little scoliosis happening. Yeah.
That's oh my God. That's a funny word.
It is.
That was the
funny.
First time I had ever even heard of scoliosis. I was like, this is great. This comedy is educational.
Oh, my God. And, it's more shocking. That I still do the joke, no. But I, you know, Ellen is funny. I was just telling Dana, I taped a special, and I don't do that many specials. No one's asking and beating down my door, but I did one And I was telling Dana that I did a joke that was offensive, you know. I sort of did it on purpose. The second show, because I felt like, okay, I sort of got all my jokes. And before I got off stage, I did one. I was telling Dana it was kind of funny because then I sort of yelled at the audience for not liking it, just to be stupid. But here's a joke, Ellen. You tell me if it's you see why they didn't like it. So I say, I went to Las Vegas for a show or whatever. And then look at blurry setup, unlike Chris Rock. I went to Las Vegas for whatever. And in the newspaper, it said that day it was the anniversary of the Las Vegas shootings, which we all had heard about. And it said, today is the anniversary of the October 1st shootings. And I asked the guy there, I go, isn't this the Las Vegas shootings? And he goes, yeah, they changed it. They got a brand expert because the Las Vegas shootings sounded too much like everyone was getting shot in Las Vegas. And I go, well, yeah, that's what happened. And he goes, yeah, but October 1st hits the ear better. And I go, oh, they hired the same people that did the Oklahoma City situation and the kerfuffle at Columbine. I didn't even get to the Sandy Hook snafu, and they had already given up on me.
Oh my gosh.
They got it. They give up during the premise.
Columbine is called Schools Out. Yeah, go ahead.
Columbine was where this woman was just staring me in the front row, and I go, too much? And she goes, yeah. And I go, yeah. I go, you know what Netflix likes is when you try stuff on your special. You don't tell them, and it could be some legal problems, and you do it anyway. And so, they like that. They like undercooked, half-ass shit that can't offend the crowd. Mm. Anyway, I'm going to wrap things up. And then I did like...
David's nickname is Showstopper. So what
was
that?
You know, it was such a showstopper.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying...
No. I think that it could... I really think that it could work because everybody's so sensitive right now. So they have to... You can't say what it was. You have to make it sound palatable.
And that's what they're doing. They're making these horrible things sound like they're not fun, but they're just like, okay, you know, it's softening
it. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
They're showing an old Dana Carvey commercial on the gram or Twitter or wherever.
Oh.
You did a commercial with, I think it was Pepsi Cola or something.
Oh.
You're shuffling cards, or is it Lay's potato chips or something?
Yeah.
You're shuffling cards.
Yes.
At a casino.
Guy, I can't believe that's around still. I think that was 20 years ago. I got over my allergic reaction to doing commercials. I turned down a lot of commercials trying to be Bob Dylan or something in the 90s. But then by the knots, I'm like, wait a minute. This is crazy. So I did do one.
Yeah, you got to take it while you can, man. Shit.
I mean, I got.
When I was with Ellen, those years, actually, Dana, you were there too for this. But Ellen, I got offered a commercial during SNL when I wasn't even doing that good, and I wasn't allowed to do it, and I was just so bummed that I finally would have had a little chunk of money. It wasn't crazy, but I was like, God dang, I'm not allowed to because, you know, NBC decides.
Mm. Did we ever talk about how much money we were making on the show?
No, not today.
What did you? I'll tell you what I started at, $4,500 an episode. So you keep about $2,000 a week, I guess, or for the $80,000 for the season, I think. Gross.
Okay, I'll go. I started at $900 a week to write, and I got a $1,500 bump if I got on.
I'll tell you how much I started at.
Okay.
$245 an episode.
No.
What?
Nothing extra if I got anything on, and nothing for writing.
Wow.
When I left there after almost 5 years, I was making $4,500 an episode, nothing for writing, and that's it. And no bumps or nothing.
Oh my God. Did an agent put that together? Do you have an agent back then or no?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, it's sort of take it or leave it, I'm sure, but...
Exactly.
Boy, I just thought there was some union thing would...
I've never said it before. No, you would think there was some union thing.
At least give
and
you...
I used to,
yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I would ask the union, and that what they said, well, that's union minimum wage, and you only work one day a week, so what is the problem?
Good Lord, really Alan. True. Damn it. God damn it, I'm fucking pissed. Now, what about Melanie Hutzel? What was she getting? Like 20 grand a week?
She was getting 30 grand.
Hutzel, don't go down for anybody, man. She was loading it up, driving a Bentley to work. Melanie needs more money than Ellen. No, what was Melanie Hutzel getting? Your peers at the time were coming.
Did you ask anyone?
No, I never did.
I didn't ask anyone either.
Where did you live? How did you survive on that?
Exactly. Exactly. No, what helped out was that I was doing stand-up. So the weeks that were we were off or whatever, then I would go do stand-up on the road. And I could make not that much, but at least a couple of $1,000.
It's very rare that the stand-up is more than the work check.
Well, in this case, it was.
I know. I'm saying definitely. That's a very odd situation because I got to the point where I could make some on the weekends if I went to a college or something. But, the joke of it's one day a week work is, we all know, is a joke because it's 24 hours a day on your mind, even on the weekends when you're doing laundry. Yeah. There's like no job harder. I mean, in the real world of like showbiz, I mean, there's jobs harder, but. In our little world, it's just a constant stress. And that's tough to hear. I don't know. I mean, and you were doing as much as anyone.
When you were getting reoccurring characters, and Queen Shanifa, whatever their name is, and you were kicking it on the show like that. I mean, obviously they started to bump you, but it just still never went to anything that was reasonable at all.
No, they didn't bump. I got, one season, I got like $200 a week. $200 and change. So it came out to be like, I
just can't do it. Saturday Night Live.
Even the next one, Uncle Sam said, we're not going to bother.
Exactly. The next one was like $400 and something a week. The second year.
Per show.
The third year was per show. Then it was per show, not week per week, right? And then the next one was like $750 a week or something like that. And then finally, it bumped up to 4,000.
To like a legitimate number, a decent number, which isn't even crazy. It isn't even a crazy high number for.
I believe, unless I got it wrong, that it was 4,500. For the whole cast, because we didn't have a big cast, so it was Phil and Jan and I and whoever was coming in. I believe it was everyone was getting the same, as far as I remember. Maybe Lovitz and Nora Dunn had a little more because it was their second season. But
we all have a different situation, Dana, because I think Ellen is brought in as maybe a feature player and not even a writer, even though she wrote. Obviously, I was brought in as a writer feature player that they wanted me to write, not really be on. So it's kind of the opposite. And you, I think, were just brought in as a cast member, but they didn't give you writing credit, even though I'm sure you wrote.
No one got a writing credit. You couldn't get one. But we all, it's not what we do here. So you get used to it, but it was a little
back
funny.
Then, I would imagine. I didn't want a writing credit. I'd rather be a performer. But
yeah, everybody's writing, I think. The only one who made a joke out of it, you two could talk that, was Chris Farley, would always say, I can't think of anything, but he was a brilliant performer, but that's what he said. But almost everyone was writing to some degree.
But Ellen, I'm sure to stay alive, you had to write. You weren't getting thrown in everything.
No. But you guys hooked me up, though. Be honest.
No, we would try.
Every time I turn around, and not just me, but me and my daughter. Every time I turn around, she was in a sketch.
I think she was 5, and now she's probably like 7 or something.
She's an oral surgeon.
What?
Really?
And she's 11?
I forgot.
How old is she now?
Amazing. So you're a doctorate and she's an oral surgeon. Huh.
Can you imagine?
I have children. Yeah. No, I can't really, but that's terrific. So that's great. Good Lord.
But here's the thing. When I think of Dana. Now, I didn't know Dana from nobody. So I grew up in the project. So I have my girlfriends and they start singing this thing that you used to do about broccoli.
Yeah. Oh, chopping broccoli.
Chopping broccoli. Yeah.
Chop a broccoli. And I'm like, what are y'all singing? We would just be dying laughing. They said, you got to see this guy. It's hysterical. And so we would tune into SNL and hopefully it came on. So luckily the day came on and you used to have us all dying laughing in Brooklyn with that chopping broccoli business. And then we would just mimic you. We would do chopping broccoli whenever we would just have a moment alone or just start acting ridiculous. We'd be at a piano or something, pretend something was a piano. And we would just talk about chopping broccoli.
That's
how you came into my life. So when I met you, I was like, oh my God, it's the chopping broccoli.
That is so flattering. I honestly love madness and silliness and catchphrases. And I love that people sharing them. I thought it was silly and stupid, but it really, it even with me, it goes through my head when I actually chop broccoli. So I'm like, I chop broccoli. So I don't know. There was a sportscaster when a guy hit a home run. He was on ESPN. He'd go, and he is chopping broccoli. So it's fun. But that's cool. Thank you, Alan.
It just, it kind of frees you up to know that anything could be funny. Not, you know, and you could just like go for it. Just go for it. That hits
you. It's a good way to put it. Yeah.
I think it's like verbal physical comedy in a way. In other words, when someone's laying out a riff like that, then you have permission as an audience member. You know, you don't have to really listen anymore. The guy's just going to say chop and broccoli over and over again. So you can laugh as hard as you want. With Dennis Miller or something, you know, it's a very intricate kind of thing going on. So you really need to listen. With that, you just
you have to hear every word.
Go crazy. Yeah. And Chris Farley with his physical comedy, you just like, you know.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Do you remember,
remember that time? Dana, when you
were you
chopping
in Massive
Headwind
Harry?
Oh yes, that was crazy. I never saw anything like that in my life. I was dazed. I was stunned and amazed.
Nothing I did.
I was in that sketch.
There was
like 95 people in that sketch, right?
I think we had a full cast kind of at that punch bowl in that little scene. And I assume our audience knows the character, but I didn't write it, but I was wearing a prosthetic thing that looked like I had a massive head wound. And I went to a party and mayhem ensued, and a dog got hungry.
So
that's
funny.
All you need to know. Google it.
That was a sketch that like was everyone's laughing and read through her head.
It made absolutely no sense. I was like, what the hell?
Was it Jack Handy?
There's nothing like dogs and children, I guess, and they put too much baby food on the prosthesis between dress and air. So in the air show, the dog, because I take a nap as Massive Heaven Harry, and the dog comes up and wants to eat my head, but the dog wouldn't let go. The dog went crazy. I mean, and tried to rip the prosthesis off, but I held it on barely. But that was an example of the audience. It was like an I Love Lucy moment, if I could.
Yeah, you were kind of trying not to laugh. We were all
mayhem.
Watching it and laughing.
Nothing to do with me, really. It was just, I was.
Yeah, when she's at the thing with the chocolate.
Doing the chocolate thing. Yeah. Anytime that she's doing just physical comedy, you could just hear the audience waves and waves of laughter. But anyway. So, Ellen.
Hey, Dana, yes. I didn't ask you. I was on mute. I muted because there's a garbage truck outside going, meep, meep. But I forgot I was on mute and I was asking you a bunch of questions. I'm going to go back about a half hour. Were you, was chopping broccoli in your SNL audition?
Yes.
Oh, so it was all the way back there. That was such a good one. Because I remember chopping broccoli, one of the first things about you that I just thought it hit my ear. I was like, it was so clever and weird. And then you were going, chop and baka, chop, she chop, she chop,
she chop.
And
chop.
I was like, what is this fool
chop,
doing?
Chop, chop,
I thought
chop,
it was so funny.
Chop and baka. Yeah, sometimes I'll do it for 10 minutes. I'm doing stand up.
You should have done it with Paul McCartney when he came on. That would have been fun. You should make him do it.
You know, it's very, you know, it's humorous because, you know, why is he singing about a vegetable over and over again? It's not, you know, I did Let It Be, you know, it's about letting go and this and that, but there's nothing really about a vegetable chopping it all the time. But I guess that's what the Americans find funny. You know, it's like I'm chopping a dooba 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 doo, a broccoli, a dooba 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 doo, you know.
He set me up. So, Ellen, do you want to talk about your hit characters or the ones that, There are two that really stood out as far as reoccurring.
There was a page desk.
Zerada. I love. I miss Zerada so much. She and I guess I'm supposed to do it here.
You don't have to do it. You don't have to do it.
I don't know if it's politically correct to do it here. Only because I really do speak Spanish, and it's not like I don't know.
I didn't think about that part.
We can cut anything, so go for it. But I just love that you said you missed the character. I relate to that. Sometimes I'll just do characters or voices driving around or I'm by myself because I want to revisit the character, you know?
Oh, God. I miss the Raider so much. She had so many problems.
And you'd always get like the host or someone involved, right?
Yeah, the host got involved, and I mean, when the first time I did it was with Michael Jordan.
Wow,
whoa!
And that was like major, and he was like, he thought that I was being ridiculous, but I was. I promised that I would sue him, and he thought that was hysterical. But the thing is that, and I said, what makes you think I won't cut you? And because that really did happen to me.
Hysterical.
I was on the train and this girl did ask me, what makes you think I won't cut you?
It's that kind of a tough question.
Is that a rhetorical question? Yeah. No.
But that's a classic comedian's move, is that you heard that in a real situation. And it is really mm-hmm. funny because it's what, not I'm going to cut you, what makes you think I won't cut you. Yeah. That is really funny. And for you to take
that's
that
a good,
and
crazy
use
person.
It was kind of one of her, she always said that at some point or no?
Yeah, she did.
What makes you think I won't cut you? That's really funny. And she did it with the Spanish. What makes you think I won't cut you? Is it like?
But it's not just Spanish. It's really Puerto Rican, okay. But a little Dominican. It's like this, you know, like it's very nasally, mm-hmm. and you like gotta put it in that like that.
Yeah,
and it's very emphatic.
Oh, yeah.
What makes you think I won't cut you? You know, it's number one.
What did Michael Jordan say to that?
He just laughed.
He just looked at me, he just laughed. And then I said, oh, you, I said, don't touch me. Don't hit me. I'll sue you, you know. And he was like, okay. What the fuck?
Did you have to do that a read through with him?
Yeah, and that was great.
How fun.
Yeah, I did.
How fun. What
so
a memory.
Kind.
You and Michael
so
Jordan.
Kind.
I mean he
God.
Was, yeah, but that's just hitting me funny now, the idea of a host just strolling around on 8H and then this page just starting to talk to him and threatening to cut him and don't think I'd sue him. You know, it's just, no wonder how many times do you think you did that?
Oh, maybe six times?
Yeah, it was on. Good.
I did it quite a few times. Mm. But I think it kind of bothered, the one I really wanted to do with was John Malkovich, but it didn't get on.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
The thing that... But I think it kind of bothered the people who were writers, you know?
Right. Because
like if I went to Harvard to write comedy, this little scrappy Negro from the projects is over here getting shit on air, you know, I would be extremely upset. And they used to tease me and really they weren't very nice to me. But
well, that's Harvard.
Yeah, listen.
No, look. It's boys. You know, boys are very different. When you compete with boys and they don't win, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So I think it was part of that. But that was in the past, you know, and you just gotta let it go and move on.
Yeah, we talked to Conan about that. Like, he felt weird. He was that had that moniker, like he's from Harvard, and I went to community college, so I felt weird. Like, they would think I'm stupid, and you know, I think everyone felt a little different about their upbringing, getting on the show, and how they got there, and how they would be perceived. But you know, if you write a sketch like that, and you got Michael Jordan, it gets laughs at read through. It's like tough shit. It's getting on.
What makes you think I won't cut you? Like you could go to Yale or Harvard or Dartmouth for a long time, but not come up with that and use it in that right. context. So yeah, I felt the same intimidation. I went to San Francisco State. It was barely a college. Sorry, San Francisco State. And I went to community college. And then I get to SNL. It's just a lot of Ivy League young men, you know, with dress shoes and tucked in shirts and jeans and short kind of waspy haircuts. So yeah, I got it. But yeah, so anyway, continue.
Now, Ellen, did you go to the 40th? You were at the 40th, right?
Yes, I was. And I think I was in it. Was it the last one?
Yeah. 20.
Yeah, that was the last big one.
15?
I did a
Bluetooth connected.
Hang on, I got to put my money in the payphone.
Bluetooth Go connecting.
Ahead. No, I'm here. I have all these things.
None of them are working.
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry. Okay. I teach this class. I'm teaching this class here. I'm at a school in Jersey City. I teach at the new school in Manhattan, but I also teach here in Jersey City. I just started teaching here, and I'm really having a good time, huh? But it doesn't have the money the new school has. So I have to bring all my stuff. So I have a Bluetooth speaker and
what do you teach?
Yeah.
Well,
in this one, I teach acting.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, cool.
In this one, I'm teaching acting here at Jersey City. And then the way Dana talks about comedy, I want Dana to come and be a guest at my class in the new school. I teach the theory of comedy. And Dana really seems to
Dana has
it.
Really deep
Not
thoughts
that you
about
don't,
comedy.
David.
No, Dana's actually
David
really good at articulating.
Writes amazing stuff. But I am fascinated by comedy and in all ways, and the phraseology and it's such a, you know, it's like trying to catch the wind. you never solve it completely. You never master it. It's always humbling what you think will kill and will not, and so forth and so on. But do you mind just for a second? Because it's kind of, I've not met any, run into any ex-cast member who got a doctorate, a PhD from Tisch School of the Arts. Like, what? Do you talk about how that happened? I mean, when did you decide to go, and how did that manifest for you?
Well, So I'm going to tell you in just a second. So I'm teaching at the new school, and so I have comedians come in and talk to the class, et cetera, comedians and producers, et cetera. So Mike Shoemaker came in. Mm-hmm.
Shoemaker,
and
producer.
Yeah.
Marcy Klein came in.
Marcy!
And Tim Meadows,
Timmy,
came and talked to the
nice,
right? And then I use recordings from different, like I use Chris Rock and I use different people's recordings. Anyway, so many, like maybe in 2007 or 2006, mm-hmm. I was doing a radio show with Paul Mooney and I was writing for him, and in New York City, and he just never came. Like, like the show was from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. So he would show up. You know how radio is.
Yeah.
You start at 6. It starts at 6.
Yeah.
Good morning, right. America. Blah, blah, blah. And he would show up maybe 7. 7:15.
Love Paul Mooney.
And then he would have been out all night. And so he would sleep.
Right.
So I had signed a contract with them. So when they let him go, I couldn't get out of my contract. Otherwise, I wouldn't have to pay them all that money back. And I was like, that's not going to happen. And so I was like, So he was mad that I stayed. And I was like, no, I can't. I got, it's not going to work. I'm sorry. We'll just have to be angry at one another. So I said, well, Ellen, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Because this is going to keep coming up, you know, whatever. And I said, well, what would you really do if you could do anything? Because I had this chunk of money. I said, well, I would like to get a master's degree from someplace. So I applied to NYU. I said, something you've always wanted to do. And I said, okay. And plus I was also, if I can be really honest with you, I was tired of hearing people say, you know, I have a master's degree. You know, when I got my master's degree, and I was like, so sick of hearing people say that. I had an undergrad degree, but you know, I guess that wasn't enough. So I said, okay, I'll go back and do it. So I went and got it. I got into the school. I applied to Tisch and I got in. And so then I took, so then while I was there, this girl said to me, she said, whatever you do, don't stick around for the PhD. And I was like, what? Why not? She said, because they're going to ask you to write something. You know, these white people always want to steal your writing. And I was like, really?
David and I have that problem too. You know?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I want to read it so I can take it.
Okay, well, that's really practical
advice. So I said, as a matter of fact, so because she told me not to, I said, okay, I'm gonna apply. So all they could say is no. So I apply, and comes to find out she had applied as well. So she was trying to thin the herd so that there wouldn't be any competition. You get it?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally get it. It's like, sabotage. Subtle, to be a friend.
Yeah.
She's taking you out of the competition. Good.
Subtle ties.
Right, exactly, exactly. So then I got in and I said, okay, well, let's see what happens. And they kept saying, what are you doing here? And I was like, what does one do here? So it was that constant back and forth. So they weren't, you know, it's a very competitive business. Mm-hmm. It's more cutthroat than show business.
No.
And
really?
Yeah. And people are not as, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Just competing with who's more, who's smarter? Or
why are they, did they only give one at the end or doesn't everybody get it?
No, they give out. Okay. So 100 people will apply and there's six or eight slots.
There you go.
Wow. Mm. And you go, that's great.
And the thing is they pay you.
Oh.
So it's like a salary position to be a PhD candidate.
Oh, got it. Hot. Okay.
I mean, it's not a lot of money. It's not a lot of money by any stretch of the imagination.
Is it over 245?
Exactly. It's about even. It's about the same.
The SNL people called them. She's really good at 245.
She'll take 245.
It's a good number for Ellen. She does very well. I think 245 would be
across the board. Rest of her life.
Great. She really shouldn't go for a PhD because my nephew wants to get. Would she be competitive? Sorry. Go ahead. So what? So I love your laugh. I can't see.
Yeah, she's got a good laugh.
So
it hurts. You really no, but when I hear Dana really hurts my stomach. But I don't know what that is.
It's too silly
really
and
makes
funny.
Me laugh hard.
Well, thank you for you're so sweet.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/fly. netsuite.com/fly. netsuite.com/fly.
Hmm.
I had
to learn... Hey, ¿qué pasa?
Oh, hey.
¿Qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. ¿Qué pasa? ¿Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language.
Hmm.
I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was.
They
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent, or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
Spanish, French, Italiano, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions. Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's the hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having
David.
A personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages. For any and all trips and language needs in life, That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today.
Ellen, what was your what was your doctoral thesis on?
It was on African-American humor in social context.
What what is there to say about that?
From the civil rights from the civil rights era to the Barack Obama.
So what was it, 9,000 pages?
It was about 400 pages, 300 to 400 pages.
I kind of feel like, and I don't know if it's fair or not, but it feels like there's like a heavyweight crown for who's the best stand-up in the world at any given time. And I think you could say like Carlin to Pryor to Steve Martin to Robin Williams. And then I'm not really sure where you went from there, but I know at one point Chris Rock was the champion, and that
Chris Rock stands the test of time.
Yeah,
his stand up, and I mean, I say this because I've been studying it. I'm not saying that because I know him or whatever, but his, when I play it for the kids, they get it. It hits hard all the time, and so I said, so, you know, that really works.
You know, he went on the other night. I was at the Comedy Store. He came in and went on. It's still, you know, he's working on new stuff, and it's just as good. You just sit there and go, wow, he put that together nicely. Like, he still knows what he's doing. He's still sharp. It's just exactly what you would think.
Which
even Kevin Hart went on. I'd never seen Kevin Hart go on, and he did a great job. Everyone did a set, you know. It's kind of fun.
Does, Ellen, going back to Dr. Cleghorn for a second, I always thought Chris was really great at the elephant in the room, or summing up a social trend with a phrase, and then working that idea for a long, long time. He seemed to be very, very good about it. I remember during the Clarence Thomas hearings with Anita Hill and all that stuff. And then he did a thing about no woman ever accuses Denzel Washington of harassment or something like that. But he did it in the Chris Rock way. And it was just a funny observation. You know what I mean?
You'll never find a woman.
That Denzel won't leave me alone. You know,
someone do something.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet Denzel, and I went to see him on Broadway when he was doing Julius Caesar. So backstage, and I reached out to shake his hand, and I'm going to tell you something. Like butter, his hands were so soft.
You fell for it, too.
His hands were so soft.
Were they soft? Were they moist and soft like Bill Clinton, or just soft?
No, not moist and soft. No, they were not moist. They were just soft.
Don't add moist.
Like they made you, no, voice is terrible. He made me lose my voice. What?
Oh, so what, was it a little bit electric? Because he's Denzel Washington, you know, in a way of just meeting someone who, you know, is just really charismatic, sex symbol. I mean, he is. I mean, he's Denzel Washington, right? Yeah. So did he get you a little weak-kneed in a way?
Well, my knees did not get weak. I actually just lost my voice, and all I could focus on was his hands. They were so fucking soft. I said, what is this? Maybe he's not a real person or something. No, I couldn't say it. No, I couldn't even speak. I lost my voice. I'll ask him.
I'll DM him on Instagram. I'll get to the bottom of this.
But I did write him a poem. And I don't remember. I have to find it. But I did write a poem. And I was doing the radio show in New York at the time. And I read it to him over the air. And I don't.
Was it? Okay. What was it about? I mean, Denzel, what would be the subject about a poem about Denzel?
It's about his hands, Dana.
How soft
hands
were.
For a and strong
he was doing,
man.
He was doing Julius Caesar on Broadway. Et tu, Brute?
Et tu, Brute? Yeah. Ixnay on the...
Hands as soft as a baby Brute.
Dennis Miller was playing Prospero in The Tempest at the Herald. You know,
I don't even know what those words are.
Trying to get my inner, you know, Mickey Rooney going way back, a 1930s actor. I remember they told him, Mickey, you can't change your lines. The camera doesn't know where you are. You know, he goes, the only writers whose lines you can't change are Bill Shakespeare. I just love when they go, Bill Shakespeare. It's like,
I like Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney, I liked him when he was in some movie with Judy Garland. But I used to love those kind of movies in the afternoon. On the TV, and because that's all they would show, and around Christmas time, he was always playing a rich guy, and he was 2 feet tall, and yeah. I guess he played a child for a long time.
Yeah, and then he was a man child.
They always were. It was like Judy Garland, and that they were like playing like sophomores in high school. And at one point, they go, "I know, we could put on a show." And then they would all start singing and dancing, and they would sing like the wind and dance. And Mickey could do it all, believe me. So,
Ellen, who were you?
I got a barn.
Oh, I got a barn. We could throw this thing together by 6 p.m.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll get
somebody
the stage.
Somebody get the cows out.
Yeah. Why, Uncle Willie's electrical stores? We could get a microphone.
And I'll put all the cows to sleep.
I'll make a hat out of hay.
Kill them. Yeah. You don't have to kill them. Just walk them out back.
Also some moccasins. Yeah, those were those great. You know, they made like 10 of those, at least.
Do we have a costumer on the ranch? We do.
Betty,
can you make 100 costumes by tonight? Of course.
Got the train coming and town. Got a woo woo. Got the train coming in, gonna laugh in the town. All right, sorry, train coming in the town. It's a huge hit. That,
oh yeah, let's ask Ellen about the 40th. We got cut off. Did you like going to the 40th? Did you have fun there? And what sketch were you in?
I did a sketch with Jerry Seinfeld.
Whoa.
And I was up in the audience on the side with all the kids that I guess are not the celebrities.
Okay. That's special. He got in the building, though. That's good.
Victoria Jackson was on the 6th floor.
I can't even see. I don't even know where I am.
Go ahead.
They let Beth Cahill drive by and beep. But they told me absolutely no plus ones. They said, no, there's absolutely, because you're going to be in the audience and whatever. And I apologize.
I brought my daughter with me.
You did? They let you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, they let me bring her in. Because she didn't sit in the audience with me.
Special.
But they let her bring in the building.
Maybe she was in the spillover room.
Yeah, she was. I think she was.
So what happened? Did you ask a question to Seinfeld or something? Was there a Q&A?
Yeah. I asked Jerry Seinfeld a question, how come there's no black women on his show?
Oh, my God, yeah.
What was his answer?
And he said, I'm sorry I didn't save the world or something like that.
Oh.
And then I had a follow-up question, which I don't remember what it was. But the thing that I liked, the trivia part about that, was that Mulaney wrote that sketch.
John Mulaney.
Oh.
So I felt real special. I feel connected to pop culture.
Do you feel like you might be the godmother to his baby in a way?
I hope at least the baby could call me auntie. Yeah. The sad thing is that I follow all that crap on the Instagram.
Oh, me too.
And it's the Twitter. Sad. I do too. It's
There's
tragic.
Rumors that Pete Davidson is the actual father. I don't believe any of this nonsense. I don't buy any of this tabloid stuff.
Baby looks just like Mulaney.
He was putting it in a crock pot or something a day later. Did you see that picture? I'm like, what's happening? Yeah, he's like putting
you
in a
You can really
like,
work a baby now. The baby.
You're doing baby bits?
But he said he's paying the baby $245 a week for all the Instagram.
The baby gets $250.
Oh,
it's perfect for a baby. They get Gerber food, more diapers, maybe a little teddy. It's a perfect fee for all humans.
I like the tone of this show. This is very good.
Ellen, did you know that Jerry Seinfeld has a new comedy album coming out called Paperclips? Why?
He's such an idiot.
You almost had me.
By the way, it should be.
Paper
That's
clips,
funny.
Why? Because he would do 20 minutes on a paperclip. When the stapler came out, the paperclip's like, oh no, we're over. We're so over. I'm Jerry Seinfeld. Good night. Sorry, go ahead.
Then he comes back and he goes, I forgot to talk about Pop-Tarts. He has a Pop-Tart movie.
Jerry, you know what?
He does not.
This goes full circle. This goes full circle to our doctor.
Yes.
So Jerry Seinfeld, over a period of years, and he was in the New York Times, he was trying to complete a bit about Pop-Tarts, and he couldn't get it to work. And he spent years on it, because you know how Jerry
cracking
is.
Cracking the code.
Pop-Tarts, because he'd say all this stuff. We saw a Pop-Tart, we're 10 years old, and our heads exploded, whatever. But when I run into Jerry, I want to tell him, Jerry, there was one fatal flaw from my point of view. And we had two-day-old baked goods, five kids. Dad was a high school teacher. No one really liked Pop-Tarts that much compared to Hostess, Berry Pies, or Twinkies, or Snowballs, or regular cupcakes. Comment, Professor.
Wow.
Let me tell you, those Hostess Berry Pies were the jam.
Are you talking about the cherry apple pie, like whatever?
Yeah, they were
magic. They were magic.
Oh, those are unreal.
And the Pop-Tarts were okay, but they were a little sweet and narrow. You put them in the toaster. They were fine, but they weren't. Jerry's bit treated them like they were the greatest.
Dana, do you want to hear some bullshit now that you brought it up? And I would never have brought this up.
Okay.
I would break off the crust on the edges before it got to the frosting. And I said, fuck it. I just wanted the parts that had frosting on them. Because Pop-Tarts were not all the way to the Pop-Tart.
I can't believe you're revealing this.
I know, and I was going to save this.
I'm checking Daily Mail right now.
Is this already going viral?
In the UK version, you're both trending. Wow.
Hashtag.
Spade destroys Pop-Tart.
I didn't even know what carbs were. I just knew that I didn't really like that edge until I got to the frosting, so just break it off. I was a fucking rebel.
Yeah, I'm with. But was it cherry or apple? What was your favorite?
I like the on the pies.
With the pies, the host
on the pies at 7-Eleven. I liked. Oh, cherry or apple. That's a tough one. I would black out quickly after because all the sugar. But I also liked Ding Dongs.
Ding Dongs sounds like a comedy punchline.
I like Twinkies. Yeah, Ding Dongs is a
funny
word.
What happened to your Ding Dong? You know what I mean? It just sounds funny. I don't know.
Oh, I thought you were really asking me because something did happen to my Ding Dong recently.
Ding.
Ellen, you're like, why did I get on the Wi-Fi?
All right, we'll edit this. And now we're back with Ellen Cleghorn on Fly on the Wall. We just took a short break.
We have time for a couple more quick questions.
We were not cutting inappropriate material.
What else did we not ask her, Dana? We asked her.
Why is she so awesome was my first question.
Yeah, why is she so smart?
But can I talk to you about this, David Spade?
Yeah.
Now, does everybody know that you used to ride the skateboard and you were riding the skateboard in that movie, Police Academy?
Yes.
Before SNL. So I'm like, oh, he really had it going on. You knew all about the red carpet and da 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 before.
No,
before
you know, Ellen, the true story is that I got out to LA and I'm from Arizona and I did skateboard. And the only reason I got that audition, I couldn't really act, but this is just the luck of the draw. They saw me at the improv. I didn't look like everyone else. They said long blonde hair and I was 20. And they said, oh, you know what? We need a kid to play a skateboarder, but we didn't think of it. But this kid could probably pull off, you know, high school. So I go in and they go, did you get the script? I go, no. And they said, shoot, we have one here. And they didn't have one. And they go, shit. We don't need to waste your time. It's just about a skateboarder. Maybe you could just improv a few lines. And this is so lucky, Ellen, because I didn't know how to read a script. I didn't know how to hold sides. I didn't know. I would have shown how green I was and how new. So I just said, yeah. I'm a skateboarder. You got an attitude and the cops are coming up. I'm like, hey, guys. I just start making up shit, you know, and saying skateboard terms. And they were like, oh, that's exactly what we need. Okay, great. You know what? Let's get this guy. And if they would have let me act, it would not have worked because they would have seen. So just improvising and bullshitting was what I was better at than actually reading a script. And so I got out there. I got 25 grand, which is great. 10 weeks.
Wow. 25 grand? It would have taken.
Yeah, so I got 2,500.
It would take Ellen 3 years to get that much based
fucking
on her.
200 years to get that.
I can't even do the math.
I know. She can't even comprehend these. She goes, you mean $25? I go, nope, 25. So I go up.
It's your first job, 25 grand for riding a skateboard? Well, what the fuck? Well,
Dana, and I get to ride with Tony Hawk and all these guys, Mike McGill. So I do, I go 10 weeks in Toronto and I get a per diem. This is why people get hooked on acting. So I do it. I come back with Ellen. I cleared 10 from all, you know, all the bullshit. I woke up like Canadian tax and you know, whatever. So I pay everything. I give my mom 3 for bills. I do 1 in bills, but I needed a car. 6,000 left after 10 weeks. I go up and I buy a Honda Accord. I drive it to the Improv and it got stolen that night. So, so I was back to zero, no insurance. And I just did 10 weeks on the road and I came back. I have nothing to show for it.
And the next night, Jay Leno showed up at the Improv in a Honda Accord. I never understood that.
It was just punked.
You know, I used to drive the motorcycle, but you know,
hey, fine,
it's
fine keepers.
Because, you know, it's got three cylinders, but it was fine, you know. No, that's a bummer.
The Improv, not the comedy store, the Improv.
No, the Improv was sketchy. Yeah, it was over on Kilkea. This is a street right next to the Improv. I came out to show Tim Rose, his comic. I go, check out this sweet pimp sled I just bought. Very sensible pimp sled. And it was gone. I go, maybe it's this other street. And he started going, uh-oh. I go, there's no fucking way. No way. I think they followed me with a key to the car, honestly, the people that sold it to me, and just took it.
That's an empty feeling.
Anyway, I'm just saying that to say.
That is a great story.
It sounded great. And then I started auditioning and I wasn't any good. So I was just like bombing. And then I had 2 years of just scraping. And then then it started to pick up a little more. But by the time I got to SNL, I'd already been like humbled. I'm like, shit, this has got to work. Cause I got like nothing clicking. No other movies in that gap of like 4 years. Just.
And then you hit big with all those movies with Chris.
Tommy Boy.
So I got lucky with that too. So, and that was direct result of like the show, and Bonnie and Terry wrote that first one, and then Fred Wolf took over, but Bonnie and Terry worked on that first draft of Tommy Boy, and then we did Black Sheep, and then I was really jealous of those Chris Farley shows, because he got to have a big host like McCartney, and he got to talk to him and go, remember when you were in the Beatles?
Chris has some just, very think, memorable.
Did Downey write that one based on like just how he was at the office?
It that's sounded how he would so ask like car. Chris, you know.
So yeah. Real, yeah.
And it was just hysterical.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/wall to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/wall. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series High Hopes is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs and even more highs of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just co-workers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu.
I don't know, Dana, anything else? What do you got? Anything you want to tell her?
Your hopes, your dreams. Just want to hang out with you.
Yeah, Ellen was
fun. A lot
fun.
Of times
Ellen...
that happens on this show because we're getting to see people that we worked with and adore and had fun with, and then we don't see them all these years. And so this is really fun.
It's a good hangout.
Yeah.
But I want you to come. I want both of you to come to my class at the new school and like zoom in and teach the kids, talk to the kids. They would love it.
Kids, what you don't understand is the highest peak of money is 245. And this is your highest goal.
I'm going to have a pipe and an ascot and be in front of a fireplace. What you have to understand about comedy
is that it's not really comedy. It's tragedy.
Oh.
It's tragedy posing as comedy. And the thing about I would love to come on and talk to the kids. You mean on Zoom? I can do that from where I am now in Missoula, Montana?
Is that where you are, in Montana?
No, that's where I was born. But no, I'm in Southern California. But yeah,
Dana's a redneck.
Did you do guests on Zoom and they just talk to the kids about comedy and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I really enjoy you guys in person. And that, but what I really like the most is David Spade doing Dana Carvey doing something.
I had chopping broccoli, yeah. Because I used to sing that around. I go, God damn, this is funny. And it was sort of out of what I think like. And I'm like, this is so weird and goofy and just clever and smart because of its goofiness. But there's some, there's method to the madness of why it's so funny.
Can we get a little chorus of it as we fade out
here? I'm chopping broccoli. He goes low. I'm chopping broccoli.
She chop, she chop.
You get yeah, he goes into
that's
it.
That's toward the end. She chop.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You got to get there. You got to work up to it.
Yeah.
All right, Ellen. Thank you, hon. Hey, what's up, flies? What's up, fleas? What's up, people that listen? We want to hear from you and your dumb questions.
Questions, ask us anything. Anything you want.
You can email us at flyonthewall@cadence13.com. Can you guys provide perspective on how it was viewed to break character on SNL? Asking because Spade stands out in my mind where he and Christina Applegate, of course, we laughed on the couch during motivational speaker. And in Lauren's voice for Dana, how was that viewed? Brian Steele.
If you're going to break, it's that other type of joke. It's like fucking Carol Burnett. I mean, it's really not what we do. So you were not supposed to break when I got there.
Yeah.
And then it started to erode. And then you, David Spade, were in one of Chris Farley's, his biggest moment on the show probably. And it was hard not to break. Yeah. Go talk to that sketch. Almost anyone would have broke.
That was, and we'll probably have Christine Applegate on soon and we'll talk about it. But it was, and I see here over the years, we've mentioned it to each other because it's turned into such a thing, but it was not planned and you're not supposed to break and you also could get fired. Dana knows it. I know it. It was the word around town and it's not Lauren telling you that. It's other people, you know, the other people around going, oh no, Lauren does not like that. So you could get fired. And so when you do it, it's fun, but afterwards you don't want to walk by him and go, okay, Tim Conway. Not the guy, wasn't he on Carol Burnett?
Yeah, you know, yeah. Tim Conway, Harvey Korman, who were brilliant, and also Tim Conway, when they were on their sort of air show, live taping, would just switch stuff out, and that's how he would destroy Harvey Korman. If someone improvises outside their bandwidth on Saturday Night Live, that might make someone break, you know?
Yeah, and they did it more in the future episodes and got away with it, and it is fun. It's always fun to watch that stuff. It can't be used as a trick. If the sketch isn't doing well, you can't
do it. Right, it can't be a crutch. But if it's organic, I think it is entertaining.
Yeah, and thank you, Brian, for listening, and thank you for
the question.
Where's
Brian from?
Probably Bulgaria. I don't know. Okay. It doesn't say. That's just a guess.
Fly on the Wall has been a presentation of Cadence 13.
Please listen, then rate, review, and follow all episodes.
Executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Chris Corcoran of Cadence 13, and Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment. Production and engineering led by Greg Holtzman.